Hey, good evening. Happy New Year. Welcome back. Great to see everyone. In order that all sentient beings may attain Buddhahood, from my heart I take refuge in the three jewels. In order that all sentient beings may attain Buddhahood, from my heart I take refuge in the three jewels. In order that all sentient beings may attain Buddhahood, from my heart I take refuge in the three jewels. Whatever the virtues of the many fields of knowledge, all are steps on the path of omniscience. May these arise in the clear mirror of intellect. O Manjushri, please accomplish this. Okay, so we continue on with our the very last segment of our pursuit of covering all the preparatory topics in the traditional Shudra curriculum, starting with the collected topics, the knowing the objective world, Lowric, knowing the subjective world. Logical reasoning, valid cognition, Tariq, and the tenets of the different philosophical systems in Tibetan, Drupta, established bases or theses. And then we'll end with a couple of classes on the paths, Sa, Bhumis, and Lam paths. And so tonight we continue with the Madhyamaka school. And personally, I'm just blown away at how different this presentation is from other ones I've read. And I've read a number of these presentations. And the only thing I can think of is that the other ones are summary versions, and the summary way that tenets are presented sort of obscures the nuances of the issues, and what this version is doing, it really unpacks all of those nuances, and a lot of it is sort of surprising and unusual, which is not surprising. So I believe we're on page 405. Anyone can help me out and either correct me or confirm that. 405 of the hard copy version, which is in the chapter called the Madhyamaka section. And it's in the subsection called the Swatantrika, Madhyamaka School of Tenets. And let's see if there's any other way of locating it electronically. It's sort of midway into that section. And there's a quote. It says, this object of negation in the face of reasoning is set forth clearly in such works as the Blaze of Reasoning and Illumination of the Middle Way. Now, I do have numerous little post-it notes in my book. And it could be that's where I read to last time. And that we didn't get to 388, but I think my reading reminder was 405. Anybody have thoughts? We're all a little bit lost.
Well, I had a note, which of course doesn't help because it uses the page number that in my version, which
right.
is not yours. But there is a line, the paragraph with italic starts, Illumination of the Middle Way says, all the cognitions arisen from hearing, thinking, and meditating. That's the page that I had noted was where I thought we were, but I don't know.
That's the page that I was looking at.
Oh, I didn't see when you read the quote. Oh, yeah.
Up above.
I was looking for an indented quote, but I didn't see.
Yeah, the indented quote is, someone might say, the ultimate is beyond all forms of intellect.
Yes, that's on the page before for me.
All
So,
right.
okay, so we're in the same zone.
All right.
Yay.
It's hard. It was all the way last year, huh?
Haha.
What was it, 3 weeks ago or something?
Time is relative.
Time is relative, yeah. So just maybe to get our grounding a little bit, our feet grounded a little bit further. So in the Madhyamaka school, which has the following segments, it has Nagarjuna, establishing the sort of root version of the Madhyamaka school, in a section called How Nagarjuna Delineated the Profound Madhyamaka View, starting on page 380. And then it has how the commentaries on Nagarjuna's works arose on 390, and then the definition and divisions of Madhyamaka, and the Svatantrika, Madhyamaka school of tenets, the so-called autonomous syllogism school of the Great Middle Way. And that's where we are at the moment. And we're about to see some subsets of that school. Okay. So Cynthia has this on the bottom of the page. I thought maybe back up a little bit and start with that section that leads into the quote. So this object of negation. And what is the object of negation? It becomes clear later on, but let's see if we scan back a minute. Okay, so on page 403, which is right after the quote from The Condensed Perfection of Wisdom, right, actually, at the page before that, 402 on the bottom, it says, this is helpful. This is worth going back to.
Two objects of negation, right?
Yeah, thank you. In this system, there are two objects of negation for reasoning that analyze the ultimate. The first takes the ultimate to be the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate in a specific subject, and then posits the subject itself existing in the face of that analysis to be the object of negation of the reasoning analyzing the ultimate. So we have to understand when they say, the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate in a specific subject, such as a tree or a table or a person, and then posits the subject itself existing in the face of that analysis. That thing which is posited is non-existent.
So we're talking about an ex the experiencer, essentially, is that right?
Right. The first takes the ultimate to be the reasoning consciousness, right? And I'm not sure they say this correctly. The second takes the ultimate. The second takes the ultimate to be establishment from the side of the object's unique mode of subsistence, which is not posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness. But a convoluted way of saying things. Mode of subsistence, which is not posited to be the power by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness. And that should be a parenthetical. It's really the second takes the ultimate to be establishment from the side of the object's unique mode of subsistence, which is not posited. Skipping that entire parenthetical, to be the object of negation of the reasoning analyzing the ultimate. So that's normally what the object of negation is. And that object is not posited just because it appears to a non-defective awareness. Let's see, is not posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness. I guess the fact that it appears to an enlightened awareness does not mean it's posited. But that parenthetical is very confusing. Let's see how they gloss this. The first of these is taken to exist from the perspective of reality, being in the field division of the inferential reasoning consciousness and the uncontaminated meditative equipoise that realize the emptiness of conventional phenomena. This is called the object of negation in the face of reasoning. The unfindability of that subject at the conclusion of analyzing it with the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate is called realizing emptiness in terms of the subject. So instead of like what I initially thought and maybe others thought is that the first type in terms of a specific subject somehow had to do with the existence of that subject, whether that subject existed or not. And that is not what it has to do with, I believe. It doesn't have to do with the subject. But let's see if we can flesh this out and feel like we understand it and agree. This is called the object of negation in the face of reasoning. So the subject is doing the reasoning, and reasoning has that object of negation. The unfindability of that subject at the conclusion of analyzing it with the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate is called. So the unfindability of that subject, interesting, at the conclusion of analyzing it. So they're analyzing the subject. I keep thinking that their use of the word subject is not the observer. We've gotten used to subject and object, subject being the observer, but I don't think they're talking about the observer, whether the observer consciousness exists or not, even though that's what it sounds like. Let's see if we can flesh this out by continuing. Apart from the difference in subtlety of the object of negation, which remains a mystery based on this explanation, Prasangika and Svatantrika are similar on this. Thus, the questions of Brahma Vishesha Chintai says not to see is to see the truth. Quote from the condensed perfection of wisdom, not seeing form, not seeing feeling, not seeing discrimination, not seeing mind, not seeing consciousness, mind and mental consciousness. The Tathagata taught that this is seeing the Dharma by not seeing anything that's not there. All of those things are not really there. Not seeing them is seeing the Dharma. Sentient beings say, I see space, as a sort of absurd example of something that's not there. Analyze this in the way we see space. So they are comparing the projection onto what we call space, projecting the idea that it is something, is similar to projecting the idea of form onto what we think form is. The Tathagata taught us to see phenomena in that way. Seeing cannot be explained with other examples. This passage is teaching that emptiness is a non-applicative negation. We know that. Space is simply the elimination of obstructive contact. When it is seen or realized, if there was something visually obstructive to be seen, it would be suitable for it to appear. However, apart from a mere lack of obstructive contact, nothing whatsoever is seen. In the same way, if conventional phenomena existed ultimately, they would have to exist in the field of vision of the ultimate perceived by the enlightened ones in their meditative equipoise, realizing emptiness. However, because they don't see things in their field of vision, they are not, because they do not, they, because they do not exist in that field of vision, they are not seen in that field of vision. In the case of space, I'm sorry, however, because they do not exist ultimately, they are not, conventional phenomena are not, do not exist ultimately, therefore they're not seen in the in such a field of vision. In the case of space, what is seen as space and what is not seen is obstructive contact. That valid consciousness does not see any obstructive contact. It sees its absence. This is called seeing space. In the same way, the uncontaminated reasoning conscious of meditative equipoise does not see any conventional phenomena in its field of vision. It sees its mere absence in its field of vision. Therefore, what is not seen is the basis of the attribute, i.e. all conventional phenomena. And where it is not seen is in the field of vision of the ultimate. What is seen is the mere absence and the mere non-existence of that. These verses from the condensed perfection of wisdom are clearly referring to that. Regarding how the uncontaminated meditative equipoise eliminates conventional phenomena in the vision of emptiness, the mind that comprehends space sees an absence that is the mere lack of obstructive contact, in the same way that wisdom sees a mere elimination or a mere non-existence of conventional phenomena in its field of vision. If conventional phenomena existed in that field of vision that realizes emptiness, they would have to be ultimately established. This is because if some conventional phenomena existed in the vision of emptiness by those two reasoning consciousnesses, inferential and direct realizations of emptiness, then those two reasoning consciousnesses would not be minds that realize that there is nothing to find at the conclusion of ultimate analysis. They would have to be minds that realize that something is found at the conclusion of analysis. In that case, because what is found is a conventional phenomena, that conventional phenomena would withstand analysis by reasoning that analyzes the ultimate. Therefore, it would be truly established if even emptiness existed in the field of vision of the mode of being of emptiness itself. It would be truly established, like the conventional phenomena that would be found. Did I get there? It would be truly established, like the conventional phenomena that would be found. Someone might object, the reality of a sprout, for example, exists in the vision of field of vision of a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the reality of the sprout. Therefore, it should be ultimately established. If something is ultimately established, it must be established for a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate. However, if something is established for a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate, it does not have to be ultimately established. The reason for that is that the reasoning consciousness itself analyzes whether or not something is ultimately established. Thus, if something like a sprout were ultimately established, it would have to be ultimately established by reasoning consciousness. Although the reality of the sprout is found by the reasoning consciousness, it is found in that way by analyzing whether the sprout ultimately exists. It is not found by analyzing whether the reality of the sprout ultimately exists. So we're entering into the Madhyamaka slant on phenomena possess emptiness. Or
this is that extra layer that they're adding in.
Yeah. It seems like it.
Wow.
Therefore, the reality of the sprout does not become ultimately established. Thus, although being established by a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate exists, to be established as withstanding analysis by such a reasoning consciousness is not different from being truly established. Therefore, it does not exist even conventionally. It seemed like they were doing that added layer, but at the end, the conclusion was not sure if it followed along. This object of negation in the face of reason is set forth clearly in such works as The Blaze of Reason, Illumination of the Middle Way, The Blaze. As someone might say, the ultimate is beyond all forms of intellect, but the negation of the entity-ness of things is the object of language. Therefore, it is not the case that there is no such... Is it not the case that there is no such negation, since it's just an object of language? The ultimate is of two types, what is called mundane wisdom has elaborations here, because it, the term ultimately, qualifies the thesis there is no fault, as opposed to places where they don't have the qualifier. The proponents of true existence would say that if the four elements do not ultimately exist for the Madhyamaka school, this contradicts their own assertion. It is undermined by direct perception, and it is undermined by what is known in the world. The passage above comes at the point of Bhavivekas responding to such an objection, saying that in this context, the statement the four elements do not ultimately exist means that they do not exist in the face of the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate, because it refers to their not being established by that. The faults stated earlier do not apply. This is a very clear statement. Of how the object of negation for reasoning is identified in the face of the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate. Wow, where is that face? Illumination in the Middle Way says.
But also what's kind of interesting is that on the prior page they had inserted that extra layer, it seemed like, about the reality of the thing.
Yeah.
And here, I don't think they have that in here.
Yeah, I didn't see it here.
They're only talking about the elements, not the reality of the elements. So I don't know whether that's just an inconsistency or whether it's implied or what.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, clear statement, clear as mud.
I think partly what they're getting at is that when they talk about the relative, they say that it exists for a relative mind. And so this phrase of... whether it exists in the face of the reasoning consciousness, I think applies to the opposite.
That so in terms of what you just said, I'm wondering then on the prior page where they said at the end of one of the paragraphs, they said that thing about it does not exist even conventionally. Is existing conventionally saying the same thing as existing to a relative mind? Or not?
It is the same thing. So that would be...
So the prior page, they're saying all the being established by a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate exists, establishes withstanding analysis, it's not different from being truly established, therefore it does not exist even conventionally. I don't know whether that makes any sense, but not existing conventionally and being viewed as existing only by relative minds, those are, you think, similar or same?
Yeah, that's an odd sentence. It says, thus, although being established by a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate exists. So what exists? being established. Or that the ultimate exists. The language is a little unclear. To be established as withstanding analysis by such a reasoning consciousness is not different from being truly established. The conclusion, therefore, does not exist even conventionally. I think what they sort of left out, or it's to be understood that after it says is not different from being truly established, and because it does not withstand analysis by such a reason and a consciousness, it's not truly established, and therefore does not exist even conventionally. I think.
And their basic view is they sort of relate with conventional reality as something people talk about, but they don't accept that anything existing even on a relative level, right? Is that?
Well, we're going to come to a description of it, which is very interesting. But that is the, is, you know, so how do they view conventional reality? How do they view ultimately reality? And how does that differ from the other schools? And they make the Prasangika makes the point that they accept conventional reality, but the Svatantrikas don't.
Oh, I thought it was the other. I'm sorry, I thought it was the other way.
You know, it's this. Yeah, you're right. It's the Svatantrikas that like accept that they're established conventionally, and then the Prasangikas. The Prasangikas accept that they appear to a conventional consciousness. It's their way of getting away from saying that they exist, I think.
Right. In other words, they sort of acknowledge that people perceive this stuff.
Exactly.
They don't acknowledge that it has any basis or existence.
Right. And then the two Svatantrikas, I think, differ. Sorry, Kevin, go on.
Yeah, the Svatantrika logic here is just, I think, faulty. I mean, I don't know how they draw the conclusion based on their arguments unless they see all conventional reality as the same as, or any conventional reality the same and no different from ultimate reality. That is, they don't want to distinguish that there are two different realities. They only argue that there's one ultimate and everything that's perceived is not ultimate. In other words, their last line in that paragraph, therefore it does not exist, is just not based on their previous argument, to my mind.
What was their previous argument?
The previous argument is what they're saying in the sentences just before that. If something is not ultimately established, it does not exist. But then they say, even conventionally, what is seen does not exist. But I don't see reason for that further definition that what is seen does not ultimately exist. So I don't know. They draw a conclusion based on their reality or their understanding that if it doesn't ultimately exist, it doesn't exist.
Well, I don't know. The language is so hard. Why don't we go back a little bit further and look at on page 400 where they introduce the two types of Madhyamakas, actually the two types of Svatantrikas. So So on this, on the first full paragraph on 400. So let's see, Cynthia, can you find the quote that says, in the statement, earth and so forth are not the natures of element of the elements ultimately? It's indented.
Yes, yes. For me, it's 547.
Okay.
So in the statement, earth and so forth, yeah.
So then a paragraph, the next paragraph is to summarize, skip that, skip the Svatantrika school. And then the next paragraph says, in the Svatantrika system.
Yep, got it.
Non-defective consciousnesses are not mistaken about their object of engagement appearing to exist by way of their its own character conventionally. The reason they're not, they are non-mistaken in that way rests in the fact that forms and so forth appear to non-defective consciousnesses to be established by way of their own entity, and they assert that forms and so forth are in fact established by way of their own entity. Therefore, the reason that they assert autonomous syllogisms in their system rests on this assertion that establishment by way of the object's own entity exists conventionally. There are two divisions, Sautrantika, Svatantrika, Madhyamaka, and Yogacara, Svatantrika, Madhyamaka, Madhyamaka, who does not accept reflexive awareness, and who accepts that external objects are established by way of their own character, is called a Sautrantika, Svatantrika, Madhyamaka. So, Sautrantikas accepted external objects, but they did not, they did accept reflexive awareness. And so the Madhyamakas mix the first part of that. A Madhyamaka who does not accept external objects and who accepts reflexive awareness, which is the inverse of that, is called a Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka. Yogacaras don't accept external objects and they accept reflexive awareness. Sautrantika Svatantrika accepts in conformity with Sautrantika that external objects are composed of new particles. Yogacara Svatantrika accepts in accordance with Yogacara the lack of external objects conventionally.
Really? That the particles make it all the way to this level of Madhyamaka? That's sort of shocking, isn't it?
Unbelievably so. The illogical particles have survived.
Wow.
That's their projection, that they survive in a branch, an offshoot of Bhavivekas tradition, which in my mind is an example of how badly they misunderstand Bhavivekas.
Oh.
But I don't know. Let's see. This is worth digging into, I think. So these two sub-schools of Svatantrika are explained more fully below. Both types assert that true establishment, ultimate establishment, real establishment, and anti-establishment do not exist in objects of knowledge, but assert that establishment by way of its own entity, establishment by way of its own character, and intrinsic establishment exists conventionally. So a certain type of establishment exists conventionally. Bhavivekas Lamb says, regarding that, if you say here that that which is the entity of imaginary natures that express form to the mind and that express form in words does not exist, then this is a deprecation of things because it deprecates what is expressed to the mind and expressed in words. This is saying that when Chittamacha says that imaginary natures are not established by way of their own character, that imaginary nature refers to either expressions to the mind, that is thoughts, or expressions in words, i.e. names, which impute an entity, such as this is a form, or a quality, such as there is production of form. If that is the case, because both thoughts and names are functioning things, it becomes a deprecation of things for Chittamacha to call them imaginary natures. They're insulting by being called imaginary natures. This statement is the clearest source for the assertion by this master that things are established by way of their own character conventionally. So this, let's go back to the middle of this paragraph. Bhavivekas Lamp says, regarding that, if you say here that that which is the entity of imaginary natures that express form to the mind, such as external forms, and that express form in words, such as the word form, does not exist, then this is a deprecation of things, because it deprecates what is expressed to the mind and expressed in words. So the Galupa Prasangikas are interpreting that quote to say that things are established by way of their own character conventionally. Is that a bit of a leap? Master Bhaviveka, when you say that the classification of forms and the words used to describe forms as imaginary natures is a deprecation, do you mean that things are established conventionally by their own character? And therefore calling them imaginary is a deprecation? Is that what you mean, Master Bhaviveka? That's a bit of an extrapolation, isn't it? It's like an exaggeration of his statement. Maybe. I don't know. But that's sort of what the Prasangikas are doing, right? I think that's a good example. Similarly, Chandrakirti explains in his auto commentary to his text, Entering the Middle Way, Madhyamaka Avatara. Here, they say that given that production does not exist ultimately. Now, when he says here, I think he's talking about probably the Svatantrika tradition. Here, they say that given that production does not exist ultimately, it is indeed the case that production from self and other can be refuted. However, the nature of things such as form and feeling that are the objects of direct perception and inference are unquestionably produced from other.
Wow, that's a pretty definitive statement about production,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. So that's Chandrakirti's conclusion of Bhaviveka's system. Chandrakirti is stating here the assertion of the opponent who, when refuting inherently existent production, does not accept ultimately established production, but does accept production from other, I guess.
Oh, so wait, these things that Chandrakirti are saying are not
his views.
For himself, it's his view of what they are saying, right?
It's exactly his.
Okay,
it's his interpretation of what Bhaviveka is saying.
But still, they're saying that essentially, not only do they have particles, but they're talking about production from other.
Right.
Shocking.
As being
unquestionable.
Yeah.
Wow.
This makes it clear that Svatantrika Madhyamaka accepts. So the authors are saying, because Bhaviveka says this about them, therefore it's got to be true. This makes it clear that Svatantrika Madhyamaka accepts establishment by way of its own character, which was not what Bhaviveka said. Furthermore, because they assert that when the designated objects of phenomena are searched for, they are found from the side of their own basis of designation, wow, they assert establishment from the object's own side. Oof. And then they quote Shantarakshita's Compendium of Principles says, being the basis of pride, the mind is called I. It exists conventionally. Its object does not exist ultimately. Wow. So that quote, in the second part of the quote, when it says it exists conventionally, what is the it?
The mind?
But what is the object of the mind?
object of the mind?
I guess the eye.
The eye.
Well,
yeah, the eye.
Well, so, I mean, you asked the question, what does the it refer to?
Yeah.
In normal English, I would think that as a referent, it would be the mind, but you're thinking it's the eye?
I thought it might be the eye, like, it could be interpreted. I think they're interpreting it as the mind.
Well, the other thing is that in this sentence, since they're saying the mind is called I, they're actually, in a sense, identical.
Yeah.
So it's not a choice of one or the other, because from the point of view of the way this was constructed, it's the same thing.
It's the subject and the object.
So they're saying mind or I exists conventionally.
That's
but
the
then,
way.
Yeah, but then the interesting thing, then the last part, it's object.
Yeah,
it's
so
not
mind,
clear what that object is, does
yeah.
not exist ultimately.
Mind has an object, and
well, I think the eye has an object. Its object is the mind. I.
That's the other way of interpreting it. The eye is a word that refers to the mind.
To the mind, exactly. That's what
yeah.
I read.
Well,
yeah.
especially because the first line they're talking about pride, so of course we inflate the
on
mind
the
into an eye based on pride.
Right.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I have to have a slight question on the prior paragraph, if I could. I'm sorry, I realize that in the part where it says Chandrakirti is stating here the assertion of the imponent who, blah, blah, blah. So who is the opponent? Like, I realize I've gotten confused about, is it Bhava Viveka that he's sort of contradicting, or are both Bhava Viveka and Chandrakirti on the sort of so-called same view, and they're critiquing.
I think
he,
I think what's going on is there's a section in the text where he talks about production through the four possibilities: the production from self, other, both, and neither. And he attributes production of self to the Samkhyas and other schools like them, and then he attributes production of other to the other Buddhist schools, Vaibhashika, Sautrantika, and Swatantrika. And so he's then referring to the Swatantrika when he says, they say.
Okay, so basically he as the Prasangika is referring to the Swatantrikas and saying they say. Okay, because
yeah.
I got a little bit unclear. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out, was he... And Bhava Viveka is more or less on the Prasangika view?
No, Bhava Viveka is Svatantrika.
He's the Svatantrika view, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so he is part of the opponent. He is the...
Right. He's the bad guy.
And okay, so it's Buddhapalata that was the so-called good guy.
Good guy, right.
Got it, okay. I just always mix up the bees.
Yeah, the bees. Mary Beth.
Just going back to that, being the basis of pride, the mind is called I, it exists conventionally, its object does not exist ultimately. Just going back to that for a second, could it be pride that exists conventionally but does not exist ultimately? Like, I sort of want it to mean that somehow. Like, that's comforting on some level, if that means
that pride exists conventionally.
But
so,
not ultimately.
Right.
Not ultimately.
Its object does not exist ultimately. But what would be the object of pride? Does pride have an object? The I?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm saying that maybe pride is the object of I. But pride doesn't exist ultimately. Pride is the I's object is pride.
There's three possible nouns or things: pride, the mind, and I. And it's almost like they all have, it could apply to all three in some way, it seems, equally.
The only reason why I tend to think that it's the mind or I is that with that first sentence where it says being the basis of pride, so basis refers to the mind or I.
Yeah, I
right?
agree.
And so therefore, that's why it seems that that's where it's flowing to, is that the basis of pride or any other emotion is the mind, and that mind, which because of pride we call I, but that it exists, they're saying it can exist conventionally. That's Shantarakshita speaking here, right?
Be interesting if we could find an alternative translation of
Right. Or get the original Tibetan to have you redo
it.
it,
Well, can't pride's object be the I?
It can.
Okay.
That's why I'm saying it's almost like all three of them have a similar situation of being existent conventionally and non-existent ultimately. I think the crux of it, though, is what does conventionally existent mean? Right? Because Svatantrika agrees with Svatantrika and Prasanga are basically on the same page with the ultimate, that the ultimate is non-existent, or there is nothing existent on the ultimate. Right?
Actually, the next paragraph where I had highlighted this sentence where it says Shantarakshita says that when one searches for the designated object of the person, and then he's sort of restating that little quote, because it's the basis of producing the pride that thinks I am, the mind is conventionally called self. So that's again saying the mind we call, we think of it as I.
Yeah,
So.
that's good. So that's pretty much explains it. Shantarakshita says that when one searches for the designated object of the person, so in the last line it says its object, and the object of the person is the I would think. Because it is the basis of producing the pride that thinks I am, the mind is conventionally called self. And so here it turns out that the mind is the object, right?
Right. But so yeah, when we're okay, if we're searching for the designated object of the person, so that's like saying if I'm looking and saying, if I'm a person, where does that personness reside, right?
Exactly.
And is it in the body? And so this is saying no, we typically think of it as being in the mind.
Right.
And so then, and that's the basis that generates what thinks I am, and so therefore mind becomes self.
Right, and leads to pride.
Right, exactly, right.
His auto commentary says, in cases when nothing is analyzed, we do not refute the pleasant nature of any experience. From the state of a foolish being to the state of omniscient wisdom.
Isn't that if ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise? Don't analyze if you want to enjoy it.
This is saying that in a situation that is not analyzed by reasoning, objects that are established by the experience of everyone, from ordinary beings to someone with omniscient wisdom, are intrinsically is a hard, is an extreme word, are intrinsically established. Kamalashila's illumination of the middle way, which is a commentary on the text where the quote comes from, which is the Tattva Samgraha. That which abides as only the lack of entityness of all phenomena, ultimately, always, and intrinsically is the consummate nature, because it is established as always being free of superimposition. This is also proven by the fact that he has the qualification ultimately to the lack of intrinsic experience.
Existence.
I'm sorry, yeah, to the lack of intrinsic existence. Wow. Therefore, although nothing is established from its own side without being posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness, this does not contradict that there is establishment from the side of the object in this system in general. Thus, they assert a culmination of all phenomena being established from the side of the object and being posited by the power of appearing to awareness. Furthermore, because Svatantrika does not identify which awareness posits everything as conventionally existent, phenomena must be posited as conventionally existent by the power of an awareness that is not undermined by valid means of knowledge. In that case, it must be a combination of the two. One, from the appearance side, phenomena such as form are established in a mode of subsistence that is merely posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness. And two, from the emptiness side, they are empty of being established from the side of the object's own mode of subsistence that does not rely on being posited by an awareness. They are empty of being established from the side of the object's own mode of subsistence that does not rely on being posited by an awareness. Wow, what a convoluted language.
Does that say something about not being sentient?
I don't think so. But I'm not sure. Established in the mode of subsistence that is merely posited by the power of appearing. From the emptiness side, they're empty of being established from the side of the object's own mode of subsistence.
So on one side, they're emphasizing the appearance aspect, obviously, and the other side, they're emphasizing the emptiness aspect. But the distinction of, in one case, it's merely posited by appearing to a non-defective awareness, and the other one, it's saying it does not rely on being posited by an awareness. So, it's just, maybe it's just that's sort of the intrinsic aspect.
The word merely and the phrase merely posited by the power of appearing to an awareness eliminates an object being established by its own mode of subsistence, which is not posited by the power of an awareness. It does not eliminate mere existence as a mode of subsistence. If these points are understood well, one is able to distinguish how the way that the two truths are posited by Svatantrika is more subtle than that of the proponents of true existence and more coarse than that of the Prasangika. In this system, there are two objects of negation for reasonings that analyze the ultimate. The first takes the ultimate to be the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate in a specific subject and then posits the subject itself existing in the face of that analysis to be the object of negation of the reasoning analyzing the ultimate. The second takes the ultimate to be establishment from the side of the object's unique mode of subsistence, which is not posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness to be the object of negation of the reason. So we're back where we began. The first of these is taken to exist from the perspective of reality, being in the field of vision of the inferential reasoning consciousness and the uncontaminated meditative equipoise that realizes the emptiness conventional phenomena. This is called the object of negation in the face of reasoning, the unfindability of that subject at the conclusion of analyzing it with the reasoning consciousness. Then analyze the ultimate is called realizing emptiness in terms of that subject. Apart from the difference in subtlety of the object and negation, Prasanga Svatantrika are similar in this. Thus, questions of so and so says, not to see is to see the truth, skipping the paragraph, the quote rather. This passage is teaching that emptiness is a non-applicative negation, and we went through this. This part was fairly understandable. Seeing space, not basically by not seeing anything other than space. So, skipping to the end of this paragraph. or to the next paragraph, regarding how the uncontaminated meditative equipoise eliminates conventional phenomena and the vision of emptiness, the mind that comprehends space sees an absence that is the mere lack of obstructive contact, sees an absence, in the same way that wisdom sees a mere elimination or a mere non-existence of conventional phenomena's field of vision. If conventional phenomena existed in that field of vision that realizes emptiness, they would have to be ultimately established. This is because of some conventional, if some conventional phenomena existed in the vision of emptiness, by those two reasoning consciousnesses, inferential and direct realization of emptiness, then those two reasoning consciousnesses would not be minds that realize that there is nothing to find at the conclusion of ultimate analysis. They would have to be minds that realize that something is found at the conclusion of analysis, which is the wrong answer. In that case, because what is found is a conventional phenomena, that conventional phenomena will withstand analysis by reason and analyze the ultimate, therefore it would be truly established. If even emptiness existed in the field of vision of the mode of being of emptiness itself, it would be truly established, like the conventional phenomena that would be found. Someone might object, the reality of a sprout, for example, exists in the field of vision of a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the reality of the sprout, therefore it should be ultimately established. If something is ultimately established, it must be established for a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate. However, if something is established for a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate, it does not have to be ultimately established. The reason for that is that the reasoning consciousness itself analyzes whether or not something is ultimately established. This is something, thus, if something like a sprout were ultimately established, it would have to be ultimately established by a reasoning consciousness. Do you get the feeling they're into reasoning consciousnesses? They definitely value a reasoning consciousness. Although the reality sprout is found by the reasoning consciousness, it is found in that way by analyzing whether the sprout ultimately exists. It is not found by analyzing whether the reality of the sprout ultimately exists. That's where we've tripped up and went, oh my God. Somebody said, therefore the reality of the sprout does not become ultimately established. Thus, although being established by a reason of consciousness that analyzes the ultimate exists, to be established as withstanding analysis by such a reason consciousness is not different from being truly established, therefore does not even exist even conventionally. This object of negation in the face of reason is set forth clearly in such works as The Blaze and The Illumination, which we read earlier. The ultimate is beyond all forms of intellect, but the negation of the entityness of things is the object of language. Therefore, it is not the case that there is no such negation? The ultimate is of two types, what is called Mundane wisdom has elaborations here because it, the term ultimately, qualifies the thesis there is no fault. Proponents of true existence would say that if the four elements do not exist ultimately for Madhyamaka, this contradicts their own assertion. It is undermined by direct perception and is undermined by what is known in the world. The passage above comes at the point of Bhavaviveka responding to such an objection, saying that in this context, the statement, the four elements do not ultimately exist, means that they do not exist in the face of the reasoning consciousness that analyzes the ultimate. Because it refers to their not being established by that, the faults stated earlier do not apply. This is a very clear statement of how the object of negation for reasoning is identified. And that's where we started, the very clear statement. Illumination says all the cognitions arisen from hearing, thinking, and contemplating on the perfect truth to say not ultimately produced is explaining that a correct consciousness does not establish them as produced. By saying that production and so forth are not ultimately established because they do not exist in the vision of reality of the reasoning consciousness of hearing, thinking, and meditation, this passage is also indicating the object of negation for reasoning. This object of negation for reason is merely something superimposed by tenets. Therefore, the mind that apprehends it is found in persons whose minds have been affected by tenets, like us. Study philosophy. It does not exist in the minds of other living beings whose minds have not been affected by tenets, such as birds and deer. It must be posited as the artificial conception of true existence. The second object negation in this system is the object of negation, that is, the apprehended object of the innate conception of true existence, in which the ultimate is taken to be that which is established from the side of the object's own unique mode of subsistence, taken to be is the key part of that phrase, one that is not posited by the power of simply appearing to a non-defective awareness. This is not clearly set forth in texts that are Svatantrika sources. However, it is implied by what is explicitly said about the meaning of conventional existence in Illumination of the Middle Way. The opposite of that meaning of conventional existence indicates what the ultimate existence of the object of negation would be like, because the opposite of conventional existence must be posited as ultimate establishment. Thus, Illumination of the Middle Way says they, conventional appearances, arise through the power of the fructification, one of my favorite words, of the predispositions of beginningless error. They are displayed to all living beings as if the nature of things were real. Therefore, by the power of their minds, all the natures of false things are said to only exist conventionally. The first two sentences of this passage, from they arise through things were real, indicate that things such as form appear to sentient beings by the power of predispositions for the conceptions of true existence as if they were true, although they are not true. Therefore, such a conception of true existence is innate. The passage from therefore by the power of their minds to only exists conventionally is explicitly indicating that the meaning of existing conventionally is to exist as merely posited by the power of appearing to the non-defective awareness, both conceptual and non-conceptual, of those living beings. The passage is implicitly indicating that being established from the side of the object's own unique mode of subsistence, one that is not posited from the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness, is the measure of being truly established. Wow. The minds in the phrase, posited by the power of the mind of those living beings, are conceptual and non-conceptual. Regarding the non-conceptual mind, there are the valid sense consciousnesses and so forth, the awareness that perceives true establishment under the influence of delusion, the conception of true existence, is posited as conceptual. It is not the non-conceptual sense consciousness. Let's see. Shantarakshita's commentary on distinguishing the two truths, says the text states, presumably. So he's Shantarakshita is commenting on a text by Jnanagarbha. The text by Jnanagarbha states, it is said that true production and so forth do not appear. Someone might ask, if it does not appear, how is it superimposed? If you're superimposing, how can you superimpose something that is not appearing? It states, it is merely superimposed spontaneously or based on tenets. This statement that true establishment does not appear to the sense consciousnesses rests on the important assertion in this system that the sense consciousnesses are not polluted by predispositions of the conception of true existence. Due to the falsity that is the difference between the mode of appearance and the mode of being of something like a pot, this Svatantrika Madhyamaka system asserts that things appear to truly exist in their mode of appearance. Asserts that things appear to truly exist in their mode of appearance. Furthermore, they appear to truly exist in both conceptual and non-conceptual consciousnesses. Thus, in this system, there is also the assertion that the object of negation, true establishment, does appear to sense consciousnesses. Therefore, in this system, establishment from the side of the object's unique mode of subsistence, one that is not posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness, is the referent object of the innate conception of true existence and is the primary object of negation of the reasoning that analyzes the ultimate. This can be explained in terms of a magician's illusion. When the basis of conjuring, such as a pebble or a stick, is conjured by a magician into a horse or an elephant, there are three ways in which it appears, with appearance but without belief, with both appearance and belief, and with neither appearance nor belief. Regarding the first, for the magician himself, the pebble or stick appears as a horse or an elephant, but he does not believe that it is. In the same way, for common beings who have realized emptiness, things appear as if they were truly established, but they do not believe that they are. Regarding the second, to the audience whose eyes are affected by the magician's mantra and substances, and who have never seen or heard of illusion before, the pebble or stick appear as a horse or an elephant. And they believe that it is. In the same way, for ordinary people who have not realized emptiness, things appear to be truly established until they believe that they are truly established. Sorry. In the same way, for ordinary people who have not realized emptiness, things appear to be truly established, and they believe that they are truly established. Regarding the third, for those whose eyes have not been affected by the magician's mantra and substances, the stick or pebble neither appears as a horse or an elephant, nor do they believe that it is. In the same way, to the wisdom that knows the modes, which is not polluted by ignorance, things do not appear to be truly established, nor are they believed to be. It's a funny way to end a sentence. Nor are they believed to be
truly established.
Truly established. Intrinsically truly established. Good. By a reasoning consciousness that analyzes the
Well, in this case, actually, those who do not, they don't mention any, right. These are ordinary people in this case.
Right.
The last paragraph.
There's no analysis.
Yeah.
I was just adding that in as a stock phrase. Furthermore, for the magician, the basis of conjuring merely appears to be horse and elephant through the power of the magician's awareness being affected by the substance of and mantra, or one's awareness. It does not appear to be a horse or an elephant from the side of the mode of subsistence of the pebble or stick, without depending on such an awareness. For the audience whose eyes have been affected, the appearance of the horse or an elephant appears from the start to be a real horse or elephant on that basis of appearance without being posited by the power of an internal awareness. It appears to be standing there, occupying the place, and they apprehend it in the same way that it appears. In the same way, any phenomena that appears to ordinary sentient beings as if It is something that exists from the side of the object's own mode of subsistence without depending on being posited by the power of the mind. That's crazy.
It's well, it, I think what they're saying is like when we see a tree, we think it's the tree is a tree, and that doesn't have anything to do with our projection of treeness on it.
It appears to be standing there, occupying the place, and they apprehend it in the way that it appears, in the same way any phenomena that appears to ordinary sentient beings appears as if it is something that exists from the side of the object's own mode of subsistence, without depending on being posited by the power of the mind. Because belief arises in accordance with that appearance, awareness to which that appears, awarenesses to which that appears are posited as being mistaken consciousnesses and as having the perception of true existence. Consciousnesses that conceive of phenomena as they appear are called mistaken consciousnesses and conceptions of true existence. The ornament of the middle way, which is the text by Shantar Rakshita, says, aspects that are apparitions appear through the fructification of predispositions, yet because they are mistaken, they are like illusions. In this Vatantraka Madhyamaka system, the example of the magician's illusion is praised as a way to understand how being posited and not being posited by the power of awareness differ. The appearance of the basis of conjuring, the pebble or stick, as a horse or elephant, is posited by the power of awareness. However, there is no contradiction that it appears as a horse or an elephant from the side of the basis of conjuring, the pebble or stick. In the same way, for all phenomena, there is a convergence of being posited by the power of awareness and being established from the side of the object. The illusory horse or elephant is praised as an example of that. Such a conception of true existence has arisen from time without beginning in the minds of sentient beings, such as birds and deer, whose minds have not been affected by tenets without needing to think about reasons. It is called the innate conception of true existence. It is called the innate conception of true existence. Therefore, any phenomena whatsoever is like an illusion appearing to be true, even though not even one is truly established. Non-defective awareness refers to a consciousness that is not mistaken in the sense of being polluted by adventitious causes of error. Posited by the power of appearing to a non-defective awareness means every phenomena is posited by the power of a unique awareness. One that is not polluted by adventitious causes of error that acts to establish it. For example, something like form is posited by a unique awareness that establishes it. That is, it is posited by the power of an eye consciousness apprehending form that is non-mistaken with respect to an object of engagement that is intrinsically real. This is the case up to the mental consciousness that is non-mistaken with respect to its own specific object among the objects included in the category of phenomena source. Anybody know what the phenomena source category is? I believe they translate the translation for the word source as Ayatana. It might be Datu, but I believe it's Ayatana. And so there's 12 Ayatanas, and they come in pairs, six pairs, and there's the mind, sense base, and the source that is the object of the mind, that is phenomena, which is the catch-all. Mary Beth.
When they're talking about the predispositions, is that the same thing as when they were talking about the seeds?
Yeah, I think so. It's except the Madhyamaka does not accept the Ali Vijnana, but they do accept predispositions.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of like what the Ayatanas and the Dhatus are.
Colored by?
Yeah, or I don't know.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah. This
I guess
system
they're doing.
asserts that the first wheel of Dharma explained in the explanation of the intention sutra, Samdhi Nirmochana, is of provisional meaning and that the final wheel is of definitive meaning. When no production and so forth is stated in this in a sutra of the middle wheel, like the Heart Sutra, because the qualification ultimately is not specifically added to the object of negation, it is considered a sutra of provisional meaning. So the Heart Sutra is provisional. When the qualification ultimately is specifically added to the object of negation in a sutra, such as in the Perfection of Wisdom in 100,000 stanzas, 99,000 of those made up of the word ultimately. It is asserted to be a sutra of definitive meaning. Thus, they assert that the middle wheel has both provisional and definitive elements. So now that we got Svatantrikas generally sort of laid out and understood crystal clear, now we dive into the subsets. It's already been explained that the founder of Svatantrika Madhyamaka is Bhavaviveka, who composed such works as The Lamp of Wisdom, which is a commentary on the root verses of the Middle Way by Nagarjuna. He found fault with each of the consequences used by Buddhapalita in the context of refuting production from the four extremes, giving extreme refutations. So Bhavaviveka says that Buddhapalita gave extreme refutations, which were too extreme. He refuted the Chittamatra assertions that the imaginary is not established by means of its own character. He refuted the Chittamatra assertions that the imaginary is not established by means of its own character, that there is a foundation consciousness, and that there is reflexive awareness. So he refuted, Bhavaveka refuted. Wait a second, he found fault with each of the consequences used by Buddhapalita. He, I think Bhavaviveka, refuted the Chittamatra assertions, three of them, that the imaginary is not established by means of its own character, which is, we saw earlier, is a deprecation. He refutes the foundation consciousness and he refutes reflexive awareness. Having done so, he then blazed the trail of Sautrantika, Svatantrika, Madhyamaka, asserting that phenomena are intrinsically established. It's just a pretty odd thing to say, that phenomena are established by way of their own character conventionally, and that external objects exist. Wow. It's hard to imagine that as a Madhyamaka person. Particularly, it's hard to imagine that Bhavaviveka held all those views. I mean, he was such a groovy guy. Bhavaviveka's follower, named Avalokitesvara, lived during the 7th century and composed an extensive commentary on Bhavaviveka's text, The Lamp of Wisdom, where he set forth various non-Buddhist and Buddhist assertions. Another of his followers, Bhavaviveka's followers, Jnanagarbha, was born in the 7th century in Odisha. Odisha. He composed two texts, Distinguishing the Two Truths and its auto-commentary, upholding the tradition of Bhavaviveka well. This master is said to have been the teacher of the great abbot, Shantarakshita. In this system, they assert the existence of external objects and do not assert the existence of the foundation consciousness and the afflicted mental consciousness. The 7th. Specific Madhyamaka works by Nagarjuna and his heir, Aryadeva, do not clearly explain how external objects exist or do not exist conventionally. However, Bhava Viveka asserts that external objects exist conventionally and that sense consciousnesses do not apprehend external objects such as form and sound without aspects. They are only able to apprehend them from the perspective of having aspects. He extensively refutes the Chittamatra assertion that the sense consciousnesses and their objects such as form and sound are the same nature. Asserting that objects and apprehending consciousnesses are cause and effect and hence sequential. Whereas the Chittamatra view them as being of the same nature, i.e. mind. And that they're simultaneous, I think. Blaze of Reasoning says, the sutra passage cited by Chittamatra because a creator and a consumer are refuted, was stated to dispel the imputation by the Tirthikas, the materialists, that outsiders say that there is a creator and a consumer that is different from consciousness. A consumer, how do you like that as a name of the self? The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas set forth mind only, but they did not do so in order to dispel external objects. Which is sort of funny on the surface, like it's, what else would they have set it forth for the purpose of? If they say mind only, doesn't that mean no external object? What else can it mean? The same text says the Chittamatra position is undermined by the accepted scriptures because it contradicts the scriptures that say that the I consciousness arises independent on the I and form. So it is undermined by common knowledge because in the world it is known that a consciousness such as that of the eye is not produced without an object such as form. Therefore, it is understood, undermined by common knowledge. So mind only is undermined by common knowledge.
But isn't there also, in a sense, they're picking, in every case, they're picking and choosing what's provisional and what's definitive?
Yes.
Because even just the saying that some scriptures say I consciousness arises independent of I and form, okay, that was said, but who's to say that was definitive as opposed to provisional?
Yep. Yeah, it's like blindly ignorant in that way. It's just like, yeah, it's a little bit odd. Such statements also appear at length in his Lamp of Wisdom. Regarding the meaning of those passages cited above, the statement from a sutra that all the worlds and their inhabitants are only of the nature of consciousness was stated in that way to refute the existence of an external, of an eternal and self-arisen creator of the world that is different from consciousness as postulated by the Tirthikas. The statement was not set forth to refute external objects. Even a statement that literally says external objects do not exist simply means that they do not exist they do not ultimately exist. Therefore, even if somebody says they don't exist, well, you don't really mean that. That's not what you mean. Therefore, that external objects do not exist is not the meaning of any sutra that says that external objects do not exist. If external objects that are a different entity than consciousness did not exist, it would contradict the passage from the sutra that one has accepted, which says that the I consciousness arises independent on the I and form. According to the Chittamatras, the I consciousness and the I and form are all not external objects. And so there's no contradiction to that statement. It also contradicts what is well known in the world, that without external objects such as form, an eye consciousness that apprehends it is not produced. Wow, how could, it's like they're politicians and they're just like talking across one another. Therefore, such passages are explaining that this is not tenable. They also do not accept reflexive awareness. Chittamatra asserts that there are two factors in consciousness, the factor that appears as the object and the factor that perceives itself, referring to the former as the apprehended aspect and the latter as reflexive awareness. And they assert that they are of the same nature. That, for example, when a crystal is next to something colorful, there are two factors for the consciousness that perceives it, the factor of the crystal's own clear nature and the factor produced as having the aspect of the nearby color. Although there are two, it is asserted that it is as if they were a single entity. So there's this is saying that the lack the crystal's clear nature and the crystal's ability to pick up other colors are two different factors. No matter how much reflexive awareness is analyzed by this system, apart from this awareness of another phenomena, there is no appearance of subject and object, and the awareness itself does not receive the designation of object or subject. When a crystal is next to something colorful, its clear nature changes, and it is produced in the aspect of that color. When it's apart from the color, it becomes only clear. For consciousness, because the aspect of its clear nature never appears separately, there's no similarity between the example and the meaning. I think that was a convoluted way of using a crystal as an example of why reflexive awareness is not logical, but therefore reflexive awareness is refuted. Regarding these points, the essence of the middle way, which I think is a text by Bhavaveka Madhyamaka Hridaya, if one asserts that the appearance as the object is the object of observation of the mind, apart from the appearance as the object, what other nature of the mind is there? The blaze of reasoning says, for us, the nature of consciousness is to produce the perception of objects such as form. Apart from seeing the object, it does not perceive itself. If there is a second nature of consciousness other than the perception of the object, please show us what it is. And Jnanagarbha's distinguishing the two truths says, because reflexive awareness is not correct, one can infer their position from what appears in statements such as these. They also do not accept the foundation consciousness and the afflicted mental consciousness. If one accepts the foundation consciousness, one would have to accept that there are no external objects apart from just from what just appears as form, sound, and so forth through the fructification of predispositions on the foundation consciousness. And that is not tenable. They assert that the mental consciousness is, consciousness takes rebirth and that it is the referent of the person. They do not assert a foundation consciousness, an afflicted mental consciousness that is different in nature from the six operative consciousnesses, they being these Sautrantikas, Swatantrikas. Thus, the blaze of reasoning says, on the conventional level, we explicitly apply the term self to consciousness because consciousness takes rebirth. It is the self. It is thus designated to the body and the collection of sense faculties. The same text says, the three various things called fructification, thought of I, and awareness that you have imputed as being produced from the transformations of consciousness are not asserted by us. This is saying that some types of consciousness at times serve as the foundation of samsara and nirvana and are concomitant with the view of the perishable collection. The foundation consciousness and the afflicted mental consciousness are not tenable. Their assertion of the subtle and coarse selflessness of persons is like that of the Vaibhashika. They assert that the emptiness of true establishment and the ultimate truth are the subtle selflessness of phenomena. They assert that all phenomena are established by way of their own character conventionally and are established from the side of their own basis of designation. Sort of makes me realize that the majority of Madhyamaka that we as Westerners get exposed to in books and in teachings, in person or in live teachings by Tibetans, is prasangika. And we never really hear the svatantrika view. And so we're all very used to prasangika madhyamaka. And so we read about svatantrika madhyamaka, and it's very bizarre. At least that's how it seems to me. Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka, the founder is Shantarakshita. He lived in the 8th century in Bengal, the son of Viharadara, the king of Sahur. Wow, that's where Tolopa had some relationship with the king of Sahur, didn't he? He composed the Ornament of the Middle Way and its commentary, which sets forth the basis, path, and fruition of Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka, thereby founding the Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka school of tenets. His most famous work, however, is the Compendium of Principles, which extensively sets forth and analyzes the assertions of principles by the non-Buddhist and Buddhist schools of India. The great upholder of the philosophical tradition of Shantarakshita was his direct disciple Kamala Shila, who also lived in the 8th century. He composed Illumination of the Middle Way and upheld the tradition of the Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka. YSM, for short. His own texts included such works as the Three Stages of Meditation, the Bhavanakramas, the Proof of the Lack of Intrinsic Nature, the Commentary on the Ornament of the Middle Way, and the Secret Life of Bees. Commentary on the Compendium of Principles. Other works that delineate the view in accordance with the system of Shantarakshita include Hari Bhadra's Illumination of the Ornament of Realization, famous text on the Abhisamaya Alamkara, Commentary on the Perfection of Wisdom in 25,000 stanzas in 8 chapters, which is related to the former text in being focused on the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, and Commentary on the Verse Summary of the Precious Qualities. Another person in Shantarakshita's lineage is Buddha Jnanapadas and his works on the Perfection of Wisdom, and Abhayakara Gupta's Moonlight of Essential Points and Ornament of the Sage's Thought. Abhayakara Gupta, I believe, is famous for having composed the 84 Mahasiddhas, I think. And other works. In the Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka system, although they assert reflexive awareness, they do not assert external objects, the foundation consciousness, and the afflicted mental consciousness. In the Yogacara system, Regarding how they accept reflexive awareness, the Commentary on the Ornament of the Middle Way by Shantarakshita says, therefore, the nature that illuminates itself without relying on another illuminator is called reflexive awareness of consciousness. They assert that the mental consciousness is the referent of the person. Because they do not assert that multiple consciousnesses of the same type can be manifestly produced simultaneously, they don't believe in cloning, they do not accept a foundation consciousness that is a different entity from the 6 operative consciousnesses. That's interesting. The way that they conclude that they don't accept the eighth consciousness is because they do not assert that multiple consciousness of the same type can be manifestly produced simultaneously. So by inverse, if you accept the eighth consciousness, then you accept that multiple consciousnesses of the same type can be manifestly produced simultaneously. That's an interesting phenomenon that I don't think came up earlier in the discussion of the eighth consciousness. They do not assert the afflicted mental consciousness, the seventh. In this system, unlike in the SSM, not only do they assert that the lack of external objects is the meaning of the sutra, they accept it as a tenet of their own system. And they quote the 60 stanzas on reasoning by Nagarjuna, where he says, what is explained to be the great elements and so forth are completely included in consciousness. That's a pretty clear statement by Nagarjuna that everything's consciousness. The four great elements and so forth. So forth would have to imply the remainder of the Dharma list are completely included in consciousness.
So I just one question is that here we're in the Yogacara Svatantrika Madhyamaka. Nagarjuna preceded the splits of the different kinds, is that right?
Yeah, Nagarjuna is like 150, and we're like way in the 7th and 8th centuries now.
Right, so his view, doesn't necessarily weigh in on any of these three flavors.
Right, he's way before them.
Right, he's way before them, and so, but on the other hand, if he's the ground that they all built on, then it's interesting because it is like he has a stake in the ground here, but yet aligned.
Right, he's not aligned, and they're all the divisions are basically revolve around him in terms of trying to explain his presentation. He's taken as the ultimate reference point, which is why he's called the model Madhyamakan.
Right, and yet this statement, and root. I don't know that I've ever seen this, is kind of a very mind-only kind of statement.
It sure is. It's hard. Wow. How are they going to talk their way out of this one?
Right. Wowza.
They assert that this passage is teaching that such things as the elements and the elemental evolutes, great term, are consciousness that merely appear as those phenomena, and that therefore all of them are the same entity as the consciousness that apprehends them. In this way, they assert that that mode of the non-existence of external objects is Nagarjuna's intention in making this statement. They don't have a response, do they? The Galupas. In this system, one first determines the selflessness of persons and then determines, let's see if we can finish this section, go over a little bit. In this system, one first determines the selflessness of persons and then determines that reality of non-duality, which is the lack of subject and object being different entities. After that, a person of especially great awareness and effort sees that there is not even a particle that is ultimately established, and therefore they come to understand the middle path that is free from all extremes. That is, they assert that there are three stages in the determination of reality, those three stages. This mode is described in this way in the ornament, which says, independence on mind only, one should understand that there are no external things. Independence on this, one should understand that it also is without a self. So those are the two of the three stages, and the third stage is the one that precedes them, this quote that is not included and is understood to be like Dharma theory, I guess, like Vaibhashika Sautrantikaism, I think. Hari Bhadra's clear meaning commentary says in this point, by meditating on the fact that there is no self because it lacks production and disintegration, one completely discards attachment to the self, then one correctly sees that dependent arisings, such as the aggregates that lack self, have the quality of production and disintegration. Because one determines that blue and the awareness of it are certain to be observed simultaneously, there is mind only. Wow. Thus, as in Chittamatta, they assert conventionally that external objects do not exist and that all phenomena are of the nature of consciousness. Although the system is similar to Chittamatta, they do not assert even conventionally that consciousness is truly established or that the reality of non-duality is truly established, i.e. the consummate nature. So they're Madhyamakas. They don't assert that mind only is truly established, which would be ultimate. They only accept it. They do not assert even conventionally that consciousness is parinishpana, or that the reality of non-duality is a thing. Their assertion of the subtle and coarse selflessness of persons is like that of the Vaibhashika. What a put down, huh? It's like, wow, you guys are like Vaibhashikas. Regarding the selflessness of phenomena, they assert that the non-duality of apprehended and apprehender and the lack of external objects is the coarse selflessness of phenomena, and that the emptiness of true establishment, lack of true existence, and the ultimate truth are the subtle selflessness of phenomena. Because they, which is similar to Prasangika, because they assert that all phenomena are established by way of their own character conventionally, even though their mind, they're not external phenomena and so forth. In their own system, they do not describe them as mere imputations by thought and merely posited by names and terms. They don't want to insult them and be deprecatory. This is just a summary of how the tenets of this system are asserted. The presentation of the two truths in the Swatantrika system and what emanates from that, that is to say how they delineate reality, will be explained in the fourth volume, as is everything else that they keep talking about. Okay, so we have a few more pages, one more class on this, and then go through the paths and stages. So let's just all make a note that this is where we are. Page 415. You guys and your cats. How many people have their cats with them tonight? Kevin, Mary Beth, and Cynthia. Three cats, 3 out of 6. Aww. Okay, let's dedicate the cats. By this merit, may all attain omniscience, may it defeat the enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. By the confidence of the golden sun of the great east, may the lotus garden of the Rigdon's wisdom bloom. May the dark ignorance of sentient beings be dispelled, may all beings enjoy profound, brilliant glory. Thank you very much. Nice to see you. Be well. Take care and so forth. And see you soon.
Thank you. Thank you.